Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Wednesday Night War Preview. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamplett and Michael Sidgwick, here to look ahead to tonight's episode of AEW Dynamite. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review the Wednesday Night War, and if you want to know our thoughts ahead of NXT, that is available as a podcast right now. We also review Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-views, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, joined by Hamplett and Sidgwick. Sidge, one of the final weeks we will get to preview a proper Wednesday Night War, and we've got some big things to look forward to on Dynamite tonight.
Indeed, this is quietly a fairly steep challenge for AEW, but it also doubles as an opportunity for a flex. This show, the main selling points for me, at least, I know Kenny Omega and Phoenix are in a trios match, but it speaks to how interesting, if not white hot, some things are on this show. That isn't the main selling point for me. The main selling point for me is whether Christian can still go, whether he can deliver a match that makes, that reminds you of the late 2000s, early 2010s Christian, whether in fact he has just been sort of left in chrysalis all of this time. He can still craft something really quite great. And it's time for Miro to put up a shut up in that Arcade Anarchy match. So there are two wrestlers who arrived in AEW to pretty subdued fanfare through the manner by which they were introduced. And they've got a chance to two for one clapback special AEW Dynamite tonight. So genuinely quite fascinated by this one, if not like massively looking forward to it.
It's funny you said clapback, actually. I don't think this has happened by design particularly, but I would go beyond just those two. A lot of this episode seems themed around answering a few quiet but lingering criticisms of the product lately. You've got the Cody QT Marshall stuff. Just how entertaining can that be as the questions continue to circle around exactly what's been going on with Cody the last few months? Arcade Anarchy has to finally deliver something to justify the last 8 months or so of this story. Christian Cage and Don't Be Cranky Frankie. And even the women's tag match. Is this a sign of it looking more like a division? Are they working to book stuff rather than just putting matches on that often feel for matches' sake or pad out the ranking? That, yeah, as you say, it sort of feels like, again, I don't think it's something they've aimed for, but it sort of feels like a prevailing theme running through this Dynamite. If this Dynamite's like a good episode, it'll be a bigger success than perhaps it might look like on the surface.
Well, Sid, let's start with Christian Cage's in-ring debut. Of course, he faces Frankie Kazarian. Sort of ideal opponent for this sort of thing, isn't it?
Indeed, they've got a long and acclaimed history together in TNA. Even if it wasn't, even if they didn't have that history that they shared in TNA with the like abundant chemistry that they do in fact have together, Kazarian would still probably be the perfect opponent, in that Christian Cage is probably going to have more exciting matches, intergenerational dream matches. It's going to be incredibly fascinating, I think, down the line, hopefully, to see him interact with like a Darby Allin or a Kenny Omega, these new explosive athletes that just simply weren't there, or at least allowed to work like that in Christian's time in WWE. And Kazarian and Christian have the opportunity here to craft something, and I use that word deliberately, craft something We usually throw these words around as a pejorative because we usually use them to describe a Randy Orton match. But they've got the opportunity here to craft something like remarkably professional, like properly well-built, crafted veteran stuff. Like, I just love Christian's penetration step, the duck behind. We're going to see some really nice chain wrestling. Just something really, really intricately and nicely put together to make you once more believe, oh, hang on, not only can Christian go, but he is in fact the great wrestling mind that everyone talks about backstage. If we can have that evidenced on screen, like in a nice packaged, proper nice wrestling match, it'll go a long way to not answering criticisms, because ultimately you want Christian to be as vibrant and entertaining as so much of Dynamite is. But if we can be reassured as an audience, Jesus Christ, this guy can still go. And how nice is that to see? Because he's one of wrestling's like prevailing good guys, I think, is Christian Cage. They've got a chance to actually put a smile on people's faces in a nice, warm, reassured glow that, in fact, he does belong.
Yeah, totally agree. I felt guilty being quite critical of Christian at the in the Revolution review and in their subsequent Dynamite appearances because of just how big a fan I am. That burning feeling I had was just to get him in the ring. Like, I understand why they wouldn't rush to that, but the sooner they were going to do it, the better for Christian. And that's built on faith. That's built on absolutely loads and loads of faith that Christian can be the signing that's as good for us, the fans, as it is evidently for the locker room and the wrestlers. I've no doubt that the wrestlers will get absolutely everything and more they want out of the signing of Christian. It's just very important that AEW remember that some of it has got to be for the fans as well. And I'm eagerly anticipating this being brilliant. And just like quietly brilliant, subtly brilliant, back to basics, brilliant. Like, I know some of that sounds a bit drab, a bit boring, but like, Christian's bringing fundamentals to the table and Kaz is super experienced anyway. Kaz is quite a nice bridge between the talent that Christian was excelling with and the talent of today that he's yet to wrestle. So he's kind of just a perfect choice beyond like the history. I can't wait. Honestly, can't wait. Getting Christian in the ring was always going to be the turning point, I think. Look, I'm saying this now. If it goes badly wrong or it's dull or we see something that makes us realise, I know he's had 7 years off, but it turns out he is looking his age, then I guess we have to have different conversations. But I genuinely don't think we will be doing. I think we'll just be thrilled to see it.
I think this is going to be a triumph. I think it's an inspired pairing. So inspired, in fact, that they kind of know it's going to be a triumph. They could probably wrestle a good match in their sleep. That's what they're going for here, except the thrill in like the 12th minute is that they are going to look like they're far from sleeping, because Christian Cage has always had this ability to, again, it's dark arts, and you can see why wrestling people talk about him in these almost mythical tones, because 4 minutes into a Christian match, you think, yeah, this is well worked fair. And then by the sixth or seventh minute, he has this like awesome proper working ability to just cast a spell. The seventh, eighth minute of a Christian match, you just bang, bang, bang into it. And then the finishes are always great. Like, he's a builder. He's an absolute architect as Christian. And I hope he builds something very, very nice tonight.
Do you think Vince McMahon would go to the toilet at that point, and that's why he never saw it in Christian? He'd be a little bit bored by the first couple of minutes, be like, Paul, watch this, I'm going for a piss in Gorilla. And then he just missed the good stuff that we'd all get.
Yeah, not to be too passionate, like you say, they don't have to go out and have a five-star classic. You've got mad bollocks to come in that trios match, as you alluded to, Sid, and of course the Arcade Anarchy, which we're going to get onto in a second. I just want that wave of relief of, like you say, of the old Christian shining through, and it not just being like, oh, it was maybe more smoke and mirrors than we realised in his appearance in the Royal Rumble, for example. So I'm really excited to see this, and like you say, when that music hits and when he does that pose on the ramp, I'm going to be bouncing off the walls. One thing I genuinely surprised myself into how much I'm looking forward to this week, I'd say quite possibly one of the things I'm most looking forward to tonight is Arcade Anarchy. Maybe partially, Hamlet, because we're finally bloody getting there, but also because we fantasy booked it for weeks, if not months. It's very exciting to see what they actually do with Miro and Kip Sabian, Chuck Taylor, and the guy who's got the sodding Pixies for his entrance theme now. God, I can't wait for that, Orange Cassidy. How are you feeling?
Pretty good. When I say it can't fail, I mean that in those kind of desperate, clinging on for dear life, oh my God, this just can't fail. But also that because of the stipulation, it can't fail. Like, I really do think AEW have earned a certain amount of trust Like, especially with, of all acts, Chuck Taylor, Orange Cassidy, the best friends, because it was them the last time in a feud that felt like it had worn out its welcome and then had a banger of a main event. I wasn't even the high guy on that match, but people love it. All-time Dynamite top 10 list, love it. And I have no reason to think they're not going to try and achieve that here as well. It feels like it's going to be Miro's big night, like, result notwithstanding, however it turns out. It's a few the babyfaces maybe need to, at least, if they don't get to win, get quite a significant amount of comeuppance. But it feels ultimately like Miro's big night or the start of Miro's big push. So there's that excitement bubbling under that you're feeling like you're not just getting the end of something that you're desperate to see. You're getting the start of something you want to see even more. I really don't think this can fail.
It's a really good idea that I had that they've ripped off to actually promote this variation on a street fight. This is going to be great, you know. This is going to be great. And as I've said on Twitter, like, it's not going to be worth the wait. Nothing is. The idea is, if you build something for that long, the idea is that you're meant to build not just a match, but the anticipation ahead of that match. You're meant to enrich it. You're meant to just create this excitement. You're meant to slowly drip feed and layer the drama. Like, it's none of that. It's long-term storytelling for long-term storytelling's sake. I will possibly get annoyed if people start saying, people doubting AEW's long-term booking. Yes, I am, because it's a boringly booked long-term storyline that just seemed to function to fill TV time, and it's inexplicable that it took that long. There's bad everything. I say this all the time. There's bad everything. And there is also bad long-term pro wrestling storytelling. The Fiend, Miro and Kip Sabian versus Best Friends. However, despite the fact that it won't be worth the wait, it might feel like it in the moment. They've got so much to work with here. And that's been my prevailing criticism. It had no right to be not as fun and not as creative as it's been when you look at the players involved and how much range Miro is meant to have or used to have. It just doesn't feel like it's been creative or fun. We didn't even get a stag do, for God's sake. Here's the thing. Chuck Taylor in a tornado plunder match is awesome. Like, he's just absolutely awesome in this environment. It's his match, but it's also Miro's match. Jerry Lynn, who put together the parking lot brawl and who helped put together the almost instantly legendary unsanctioned match between Baker and Thunder Rosa, he helped put that together. Like, he's going to really help this soar. It's going to have scope for sight gags as well. Like, you could have Ready Player 5 on the Tron and then Trent comes back to make his return. You could have Orange Cassidy get sort of sidetracked and have a go on one of the actual arcade machines, and then Chuck Taylor has to, like, grab him by the throat and say, look, I'm getting my ass kicked here. And then Cassidy can shrug, take off his glasses, and then bring the fight. Like, even if they don't do those specific things, what I'm driving at is that there are opportunities for them to realize sight gags. And there's something about the hard edges, and they're going to gimmick these. I'm not an idiot. I'm not a mark. And they're going to gimmick these tables. But the illusion is there's two layers of wood. There's jagged corners and arcade machines. Like, this is going to look worse, significantly so, than a tables match. Like, I think this could be, like, genuinely joyous mayhem if it reaches its ceiling.
I want Miro, just in the throes of violence, to swing like a sock full of quarters, and then one of the quarters to spill out, and Kip Sabian get distracted and pick one up and start playing the game.
Yeah.
Like, just, and then Miro's like, come on, like, we're in the middle of here.
But that's the thing, is loads that can do with this, and I'll be disappointed if they don't do enough of it.
Exactly. I love all these arcade pictures, but mine's really simple. And if they don't do this, I'll be genuinely upset. Like, they've had this partnership in the past with Cracker Barrel. Literally just have Miro Donkey Kong a barrel at one of them, because it's just the easiest, like, most, you know, well-known crossover gag that you can do, Sige.
Yeah. Who did the call? Diddy Kong? Was it Kip Sabian? Donkey Kong Jr.
Donkey Kong
Jr. And then on Twitter, Kip Sabian went, get your facts right, it's actually Diddy Kong. Half, if some of that crack on telly, please, for Christ's sake. It's mad as hell. So they know of the game Donkey Kong. They are all, like, insane hardcore gamers in this match. So I suspect you'll get your wish, Wilbur.
Please. And in terms of your wishes, Sige, more trios action tonight. Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers versus the Lucha Bros and Laredo Kid. We did very good podcast. It was mainly me just sitting here and listening to Sige booking a potential trios tournament, which you can still check out, What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcast from. How do you see this match in particular playing out tonight, Sige?
It's going to be like one of those matches where it'll either be absolutely incredible and you just left awed by the action, or it's going to be, yeah, that was really good. I've probably seen some better trios matches earlier in the year. 4.25 stars, I'll put this one as. You know what I mean? It's one of those where, like, it's just going to be incredible. It's just the extent to which it's incredible. At some point, right, and I know Moxley didn't do it because he was the babyface and they know how to book, but Chris Jericho lost to, or took a fall, rather, to Scorpio Sky to build a TV program. He also went to a 10-minute draw with Jungle Boy in something that I believe was abandoned because they thought, when we'll do something major with Jungle Boy, they've got so much stock in him that it has to happen in front of a full crowd. What I'm driving at here is that Kenny Omega at some point has to take a win. And they've been building very much so the idea that he hasn't lost a singles match in like 500 and odd days. This is becoming more and more pronounced in his introductions and in the ring announcements and on the lower third graphics, so much so that I'm sniffing the loss, the fall coming, which will inform like a TV program or a TV match. And I would probably happily have any three of these guys on the other side of the ring take it. It's a shame that Pac's injured, not just because he's great and, you know, we'll wish him all the best, but they hinted at a Pac Omega continuation. But it'll be more interesting because the rules are reversed. Like, Kenny Omega's the heel, be a different kind of match. And they nailed their chemistry just at the last one as well. So I would have had Pac over Omega in a match like this to build to that teased match in January, I think they teased it, or late December. Regardless, I would happily have Omega versus Laredo Kid on Dynamite. Mm-hmm. If they have Laredo Kid take, like, Omega take the fall to Laredo Kid, they've instantly got like, oh, Jesus Christ, he's beaten Omega. And then Omega can beat him. And if it's a bit 50-50, you nonetheless get Laredo Kid over as this guy you can parachute in with like an inbuilt baked in aura of the guy who pinned Kenny Omega. And he can then proceed to do all sorts. I would take Omega versus Phoenix. Yet again, I would take Omega versus Penta. Yet again, there's also scope for Kingston and Moxley to come out and build a match in the Young Bucks. Like, there are a million permutations, and that's the benefit of this elegant spider web that Omega's constructed.
Yeah, this is the other side of the criticisms we sometimes have about them almost having too many ideas for Kenny Omega as the world champion. The Laredo Kid pitch is great, because wasn't it him that Omega targeted like a bullying arsehole last week? You know, of like, when it's a fair fight, Laredo Kid getting the win would be great. They've had that title match before that was fantastic for AAA last year. That it would be just tremendous to see that on Dynamite. I wondered as well, spinning off from all those potential run-ins, or not run-ins, but various people that are involved tangentially in this story, if at any point AEW kind of going to open the window a crack to Impact, and if and when we'll see Rich Swann make an appearance on Dynamite, maybe just one, just to promote that. And I know it seems so one-sided in who gets what out of this relationship. I know it feels more like, because of obviously the paid ads gimmick, and just in general, just the way that AEW presented on Impact versus the way that Impact guys, I mean, what is it? You've got John Moxley blaming Impact for the ring. And Jim Ross always calling the Good Brothers those goddamn yahoos from Impact. It sounds, it sounds like this Bush League spit and sawdust wrestling company. It reminds me of Vince McMahon talking about WCW when, like, they were a credible company. So I wonder if at some point, like, Impact gets any agency to at least sell that. Because it's title for title, isn't it? It's not just Rich Swann's belt on the line. I know Kenny Omega's going to win, but it's belt for belt. So it'd be nice to think that in the interest of building something in that, Rich Swann makes an appearance on Impact, and he does feed into this, obviously, through the Good Brothers. He does sort of feed into this amongst everything else and everybody else going on. Busy matches are the better places to do this, because you can kind of obscure stuff. So a six-man looks more appealing than, say, like an Omega singles match, for example, as a place to do something like that. Even just an attack, if not something that directly impacts the result.
Yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Another thing I'm really looking forward to tonight, just intrigued by it, is this exhibition match. Cody Rhodes, QT Marshall, Arn Anderson, special guest referee. What's going to happen, Michael Hamflett?
I don't know. Cody lately has been, like, I'm starting to worry a little bit about how much people can earnestly say they benefit anymore from, you know, like last year, the TNT run. Like, they were all one-offs. But Cody was wrestling most weeks, and babyfaces, it would be from one great night, like Warhorse being able to capitalize on some sort of fame, to Eddie Kingston getting a job, to Brodie Lee getting over as a monster. People were getting over in varying ways versus Cody Rhodes. And then we've kind of had the opposite of that a little bit this year. Jade Cargill, I think it's very much 50-50 what she got from, like, if you think about the first exchange, the first promo exchange, because they backburned her and put her in the crowd, like, clapping along, it took the match followed by another squash to maybe, like, get, I don't necessarily think Jade Cargill got tons from her time with Cody. Penta feels a bit like a crime, in truth, that you go to such effort to, like, put forth this great one-week build and then just have him no-sell his big move and, you know, get the win, that sort of thing. I don't think Scorpio Sky was made by battering Cody off the top of the ladder to win the Face of the Revolution match. It might still come for Scorpio Sky, but I don't think that moment was it. I don't know if it's because his booking's been a little bit scattershot or what. I don't know how much of it is by design, but I just don't think people are getting the rub they used to get from Cody. So I'll be interested to see, or not this year, and I'll be interested to see if that can happen for QT tonight, because I'm sure he's going to want to. I'm sure, like, all this talk about, like, how hard he works behind the scenes, the kind of reveal that he helps Tony Khan in the booking and he's the last guy to turn the lights off at Daly's place and all that sort of stuff. I don't think that's come out by accident. There's loads and loads of history between these two. The footage of QT always being there by Cody's side in the early days of, like, the press conferences and Cody's entrances and stuff like that. They've gone to the trouble of digging this all back out and just peppering it around so you can see it all. And then Arn Anderson currently exists as this guy that you're wondering might have one eye on the Pinnacle, you know, coming out and flashing the four fingers the week before the Pinnacle were formed. We now know that he's perhaps getting some splinting in his ass between his old friends and the Rhodeses. So I'm really interested in how it goes, but I'm maybe not as optimistic as I would have been previously because I just don't think Cody's a form player at the moment.
Yeah, I can't disagree with any of that. In terms of the match itself, what I would like to get from it is, I've said that in 2019, I thought it was untenable for Cody Rhodes to ever turn heel, and it might be an indictment of AEW if they could allow the Cody character to reach that point, in much the same way Bayley in 2015. Oh, they, you know, they botched everything if she becomes a heel, and true to form, they botched it. Like, it just feels like, come on, crowds, God willing, are closer than they've ever felt since March 2020. Like, don't...
I beat a revolution, though, didn't they?
You were?
His comeback got booed, didn't it? A revolution.
Did. He was getting Cody chance as well. So, but that's the thing, it's split. Like, it's split. Yeah, and like, you didn't think it would ever get split. In this match, right, I want Cody to be more of a big-time concern going forward. Like, he can do loads with Ethan Page. He can get various heels on that roster over. I want this to act realistically as a mere transition to the teased and better suited to the mid-card than Cody is, QT Marshall versus Lee Johnson program. I want Cody to perform with, not condescension, but like being benevolent in this match. Like, he was kind of patronizing him yesterday. I said, I won't really hurt you, but you know, I can beat you without hurting you. Like, do that out of friendship, not arrogance, in the guts of the match. And I want the story to be that Cody, and it's a fine balance to tread, but I want him to not feel like he's doing it to be patronizing, but because he knows QT Marshall, and it's the stark truth, is nowhere near the wrestler or the star that he is. So if he can just do it nicely, right? Nicely. Again, as ever, the template is Bret Hart. At WrestleMania 10, Bret Hart, and just impeccable match construction. Didn't want to go full on his brother because Owen was in fact his brother. And just a clothesline in that goddamn match had more drama baked into it than virtually any sort of epic moment in any other match, because he just laid it in. And it was like, oh God, he's laid that in against his brother. And oh, this is getting out of control. It's great. So I want Cody to kind of be aggressive because the challenge has been brought to him, not just because he's patronizing his opponent. Basically, in the end, Cody wins the exhibition. He's professional enough during it and not a twat. Goes to shake Marshall's hand. Marshall, pissed off that he's lost his big moment, just, and Cody can bleed, and he loves to bleed. Mark his face up, QT Marshall, and have Lee Johnson make the save. And Cody is a conduit to get to the full Johnson versus QT Marshall program.
Absolutely. It's a fine line he's got to tread, like you say, between not wanting to hurt his friend and just being a condescending bit of a knobhead. But I do like the idea of him going, oh, I could have probably put you in the figure four there, but I'll let you out. And then QT Marshall just slaps the taste out of his mouth and then gets a brutal-looking crossroads to finish the match. That's the way I'd book it. I think that's the right way. And, yeah, hopefully we get the Lee Johnson thing to follow it. We've also got Moxley versus Cesar Bononi. Bononi, of course, at the moment heavily involved in seeking treatment for his wife's leukemia, if I'm right in thinking that. Best of luck to him for that. Obviously, all of us here at What Culture fully behind him, supporting him and hoping it all goes well for him and his family. It's not going to go well for him tonight on Dynamite, though, Sige.
No, it's not at all. It's a nice, really nice, benevolent gesture. And as much as you might think the match is filler, and it can't really be anything else other than filler, and in the nicest possible way, I hope it doesn't go too long. You can accomplish a nice thing, and it can double as a functional thing that doesn't undermine this just incredible mythology that surrounds the John Moxley character at this point. Quick, easy business. A nice bit of visibility for Bononi, who needs it because he's got a cause attached to him in real life, after which Moxley can cut a promo in the ring and be awesome. Like, it doesn't need to be benevolent and basic and short. That's what this needs to be and nothing more.
Because Hangman Page didn't exactly struggle with him last week, did he, Hamper?
No, he didn't. This is sort of brilliant, isn't it, as well? Because John Moxley is their quarter-hour guy. He's there, like, he's the safest ratings bet that there is. So in terms of getting, if the gesture is entirely benevolent, which I'm sure it is, the idea of getting eyeballs on Bononi, there's nobody better than him going up against Moxley. It's going to get him hyped beforehand. It's going to get him watched on the night. It's lovely. It's really, what a lovely reason to be getting spiked into the mat with a DDT. That's just really, really sweet.
We alluded to it earlier, Hamflet. It is Hikaru Shida and Tay Conti versus Nyla Rose and the Bunny. Matt Hardy's weird promo. Let's try not to bury Matt Hardy, actually, for what? What do you think about the match? Just to take us away from that topic.
Well, it's the second of the quiet next steps from the Britt Baker Thunder Rosa match. Britt Baker's promo was won last week, mm-hmm. undermined slightly by the match later on the show, I think, or certainly the fact there was only one match and not more. I think wrestling sometimes is too subtle, certainly AEW is too subtle for its own good, and then maybe should have just hoisted another match on there. Extra representation would have benefited, especially last week in the wake of the awesome lights out main event. But this is another positive step. It's a bit of world building. It's there's the basics of a couple of different angles folded into this match that even if it goes in the dreaded quarter hour, it won't be for the want of attempting to actually get more than one woman over at a time. Or this is not just about padding results or setting up a number one contender. I have no doubt this will pad some results or set up a number one contender, by the way. But what I'm saying is that you're trying to draw some divided lines between heels and baby faces, as you do in the men's division. Parity isn't just established through representation, it's established through booking style as well. And this is far closer to how they would book the men. Tay Conti just shows remarkable growth. I'll say this for virtually everybody that seems to sign and sit under, I don't know, Dustin Rhodes learning tree.
Dustin Rhodes and Jerry Lynn and Kenny Omega are like the three minds attached to that women's division.
For how little they can work on television, you've got like one TV show and two YouTube ones. The growth is fabulously quick. Like, and that goes all the way up to Britt Baker as a talker and as a wrestler. So Ty Conti has, it feels like she's come on twice as fast as she did in twice as long in WWE's Performance Center. So she's somebody I think to get excited about. Nyla Rose is great. Probably haven't seen as much as what the Bunny can do considering how long she's actually been in wrestling. So I've got fairly high hopes for this. And I just like the booking. This is a proper step forward from the likes of that match in AEW's continued solid world building of this women's division.
Yeah, it feels like it was a very contrived and sudden, almost inexplicable means of engineering a tag team match. And as a result, I couldn't exactly get thrilled by it, nor can I get thrilled by the prospective match quality. But I think Ali is very effective as a valet, knows where the camera is. She injects her own personality into her interferences, which she always times like really impeccably. But I've not seen enough evidence that she can go in the ring. So I've got low expectations as a result of this match, which feels like a flimsy pretext to engineer tension between Conti and Shida. Mm. The messaging last week was that Conti's on the rise. She's capped off an impressive dark winning streak with a win against one of the old doins of the division. And how do they get to the Shida match from there? Dreaded miscommunication? I don't know. It's all a bit not great, this, and I don't care.
Yeah, you're certainly looking at this match as setting up the next contender for Kairi Shida. It's not going to be Nyla Rose, you would assume. Take on T seems the most obvious, but maybe they're just going to suddenly strap the rocket to the Bunny with their association with Matt Hardy and his ever-growing stable. But
she's there to eat a pin. But then how do you build the title match from there?
Yeah. Very often that I sit here and talk at length about someone announcing they've got a gift for someone else and getting excited about it. Nevertheless, Sige, MJF tonight has a gift for the Pinnacle, and I, for one, can't wait to find out what it is.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's kind of indebted to the how to neatly package an Inner Circle promo segment as a selling point when realistically it's just a promo segment. Mm. But again, there's an actual hook to this one. It's not just some kind of synonym for a verbal interaction like town hall or just said the Inner Circle or an interview. Great. They're all great talkers and the storyline's like really complex and interesting. This feels like it's got a purpose. I've got no idea what it is. It could be anything. We can speculate on what it is. There's been some traded eyeball emojis between Dr. Britt Baker and various members of the Pinnacle.
Ooh.
That might indicate that the gift is a member who is clearly on the ascent to championship gold and is at the pinnacle of her division of which she is the face. So that's a potential direction that could go in. Be absolutely hilarious. NXT's complete lack of relevance. If people go, Christ, isn't it great that they've got a woman in a stable with men? Yeah, NXT did it first, but no one watches it. So like no one knows in the way. But realistically, like this could be a proper chance for the representation and the parity that we've been crying out for quite some time. Or it could, in sort of a continuation of that ongoing chess battle between MJF and Chris Jericho, there's every chance, and this is like good sports entertainment, that the gift, in fact, is some kind of, like, I don't know, some kind of Jericho prank packaged inside a box that could summon the Inner Circle out and they can finally get comeuppance for, like, basically booting them out of Daly's place a couple of weeks back. So I'm going to predict either Britt Baker is the gift as a new member or there is something in the box that MJF didn't really think was going to be in it.
I really like the Britt Baker pitch.
Yeah.
All I had was jackets. Like, you know, they've done jackets, didn't they, in the Inner Circle? That was the gag. Big jacket, but this time it fits Wardlow. This time it, you know, fits FTR already had jackets of their own when they were kind of teasing this stable such a long time ago. So yeah, I had this down as one of them. If anything, this titling convention, it was funny, Wilbon, when he tied up saying, it's not often that I'm excited about a segment centered around a gift. And I was like, actually, I think it is pretty often. I think we've done this about six times in the Inner Circle. I kind of thought this was maybe set up to skewer that. So MJF takes the mic and says, oh, I told everybody I had a gift for the Pinnacle tonight, but we're not about the frivolousness and stupidity of the Inner Circle. I do have this gift for you. It's whatever. But in reality, I'm not going to just waste and chew up TV time like Chris Jericho chews hot dogs, you know, like the whatever his fat joke is this week. Like almost.
Don't worry, the fat jokes.
Almost taking the piss out of the Inner Circle's propensity to do this sort of stuff and just take this idea in a different direction. But Britt Baker's the best pitch, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I think all I had was a little bit of the bubbly just so we can get some summer sales going on. So yeah, the Britt Baker pitch.
The bubblies.
I think
it's not Britt Baker's, obviously, Chris Jericho's. Just to avoid cancellation there.
Let's wrap up here. Point worth me saying, who wins the Wednesday Night War? How much does AEW win the Wednesday Night War by this week? Last week, 757,000 played, 678,000 AEW's favour. That was closely predicted by, me, because I'm great at this. So I'll go first this week. 775,000 plays, 700,000 for NXT. I think they might get a little bit of a bump, what with it being the whole takeover, stand and deliver, go home show. And the penultimate, Wednesday night, NXT. Sige, what numbers are you thinking this week?
I think it'll be similarly close. I think the build to stand and deliver has been absolutely woeful. But last week's rating indicates that people are more into it than we are. And I think maybe the idea that they're doing a takeover on TV has made people think, well, I've got more incentive to watch it now rather than sign up for the network or whatever. Therefore, I'll get engaged with the build. I'm looking forward to this. It's on telly. Like, that's the only reason, because NXT is so cold, and yet they were really competitive in overall viewership last week. So I think it'll be close. And I do think that AEW, in terms of overall viewership, will finally, after pretty stark, like, come down from Revolution, we'll get over 800, and won't it just be the case that, Christian Cage and Miro, WWE wins, really. WWE's real. That's a real quiz. XWWE stars are a real quiz. So I think a flat 800 will narrowly beat 735.
How about?
I had 800. I had lower for NXT, I'll be honest. But I had 800. I was just I was waiting for AEW to turn this number around a little bit and get it to some more familiar footing of those 800s. But not in spectacular fashion. Like, I just don't foresee this card being like an 890 or something, you know, or something like that. So I was thinking about 800. I just think lower for NXT. It's fair play, I guess. Like, the, you know, if the Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly stuff is working for people, it was saved for the last segment. I haven't said that though. That quarter hour got absolutely butchered by Darby Allin and John Silver, didn't it? So maybe it's not that specifically so much as it is the overall takeover thing. So yeah, maybe they're onto something with some of that. But yeah, like, I'll say 600, 800, just to keep the numbers easy. I'd like AEW to be doing better, because I think their post-Revolution television's probably been better than the ratings have suggested.
Well, far better, I would say.
Six legs, eight legs, 600, 800. I think we've had enough office quotes for one podcast today. but let us know your thoughts ahead of AEW Dynamite on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, they can, of course, follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at
Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, where you can hear our preview of NXT right now. And you'll get daily wrestling podcasts and, of course, the reviews of both shows tomorrow. For now, though, this has been the Wednesday Night War preview of AEW Dynamite. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, Prime members. You can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.